is the best show here.
Best show! Best show! Best show!
The Linux Night Tech Show is on. Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open technology,
and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
Here we are, episode 183, the Linux and Tech Show.
That's right. 183 episodes, and we have a great and interesting guest tonight with a wonderful product. Pat?
We've got Philip Combs from the ZoneMinder Project. Philip, thanks for staying up late in the UK with us and spending some time chatting with us. We appreciate it.
That's no problem at all. I'm glad to be with you.
Can you give us a little rundown of exactly what is the ZoneMinder Project?
It's open source and it's freeware, so it fits into that bracket. But it's basically a way of implementing a video security, a CCTV type of solution with various bits of hardware that you might have lying around that you can use to protect your house or factory or whatever. So essentially it runs on a normal Linux platform of various distributions, and there are various ways to get hold of it. And it works with kind of traditional video cameras, not city camera type things, but traditional security cameras or IP cams or pretty much anything really. And it's kind of there's two main bits to it. One is it's got a core kind of processing element which stores things and analyzes things, and then there's a web interface which lets you get in to look at stuff, basically, in a nutshell.
So what's the minimum hardware requirements? Do you need a server always running in the back end?
If you want it to be monitoring all the time, then yes, you need a server running all the time. In terms of hardware, it's quite a broad sweep. If you've got, say, one IP camera just overlooking your front door, then pretty much anything would do it. As you increase the number of cameras and you increase the number of frames you want to analyze per second, or the sizes of the image, or you instead of, say, just recording, you want to do motion detection, it builds up, it scales up. But essentially, you can get something going on just about anything.
How many cameras does it support at one time?
Well, there's not really any practical limit. People have systems with, say, 30-odd cameras on. I mean, that's pretty much the effective limit at the moment on one box. I mean, and that box will probably have a couple of CPUs on it, and maybe that will have, if it's using normal video cameras, it maybe have a sort of dual PCI bus, because the video throughput is actually quite high, and quite often that's something you don't necessarily consider until you get into this kind of application, that you start actually overwhelming the PCI bus. So about 25, 30 cameras seems to be the current sort of practical limit. But as technology increases, then that's likely to go up as well.
So now I take it from... Oh, Pat, you were going to say something?
I was going to say, you have the cameras running. Are you able to record what you're seeing on the video?
There's lots of different modes you can run it. You can either record continuously and just have a log effectively of what's going on. You can have a motion detection mode where it doesn't record anything unless it detects something's happening. You can have a mode where it records continuously but makes a note when something's happening. You can have a mode where it doesn't do anything unless it's triggered externally by either another camera, say, or by some other piece of hardware. So there's an actual motion detection. The camera is an adjunct to some other system. So you can do it really how you like, and people do use lots of different methods, or they mix. In one installation they have one camera that's recording all the time, and a couple others that are motion triggered effectively.
Now, I guess probably one of the big questions our listeners might have is, what format does it record in?
Well, I mean, it records effectively as frames. The image is stored as individual frames, so it doesn't commit you to a format, a video format, when it's running. The information is stored in a database, and individual images are stored in a file system. When you come to view it, you can view it as a streamed sequence of JPEGs, or you can view it as an MPEG stream, or AVI, various different formats of video, if you prefer to watch it like that. But essentially, from a evidential point of view, it seems to be the consensus that having individual frames, if you needed to present that as evidence of something, is easier to manage. And it looked upon more favorably by authorities and so forth. But essentially, I mean, it was done like that just because that was the convenient way of doing it in the first place. So it's only converted into a kind of a video format when you want to archive it off, or if you want to view it, or do something else with it.
So then does that make use of MJPEG tools?
It makes use of multi-part JPEG streaming, yes. So when you're viewing historical events or live streams, that uses what's called multi-part JPEG, which is effectively JPEG images streamed one after the other. So it doesn't have the compression advantages of MPEG, but it's gentler on the CPU of the server. But you can, alternatively, you can choose MPEG if you want, if that's how you prefer to view it.
So if you choose to view it for, like, MPEG, it uses... MPEG encode or FFmpeg, whichever one you have, and then it does the encoding right on the fly to allow you to view it, or does it have to encode it and then allow you to view it? I mean, is there like a significant delay, or is it a real-time process?
Well, you have several choices. If you're looking back over something that happened before, a historical event, you can either view that event with it being encoded on the fly, or you can get a download effectively, so it creates a clip and download that and store it. Or if it's already downloaded, it will just play it for you or let you access it. If you're looking at a live stream, then yes, obviously it is all done on the fly. MPEG type of viewing of live streams, some people prefer it and some people don't. I personally don't really go for it because they're... most of the plugins and things want to buffer a certain amount of video, and that generally means that you're at least a few seconds behind, and sometimes they drift a bit and they get even further behind, so you kind of get a false impression of what's going on. So I mean, I find the JPEG streaming, which in most browsers is effectively looks like a video stream, that's a bit more immediate for live streams, and the video stuff is sometimes better for archiving off and viewing historical events, and you can choose to have one in one format and one in the other format.
Now, the remote access, what are you running for that? Is that a Apache?
Yeah, it's Apache. Effectively, the web side of things is written in PHP. The database is MySQL database. I did do a port to Postgres once upon a time, which never actually got into the trunk, but that's something I want to fold back in a bit more now to give you an option of a different database. But yeah, it's PHP. It's a quite a simple, basic web interface. You log in, you get presented with a list of your cameras, and from there you can browse to lists of events or do configuration and so forth. But you don't actually need to do any of that really to have the system running. You don't need to be logged into it. There's no X, there's no GUI component that requires you to do things. Once you've done the initial configuration, which you generally would have to do over a GUI, but you could do it just by populating the database directly. But once you've done that, you can, if you prefer, you don't need to touch the GUI again.
So when you install this, do you already have to have a LAMP server running to run this on, or does it install PHP by itself at whichever version you're using, or MySQL, or a limited Apache server, or
you have options. You can just download it and install it from source. ZoneMinder, this is onto an existing server which has those components already configured. There are also RPMs. I don't generally create the RPMs, but there are other people on the website who create the RPMs. And there's also a live CD which is a full distro with ZoneMinder on it, has all the other stuff on it as well. So you can kind of try that out if you like. You can't run it completely from CD because it does need access to some disk to store historical events, but you get a feel for it, and you can do an install from that CD with everything on it. Again, that's something that that someone else has contributed. I'm fortunate to have quite a bit of help with this kind of with that part of it.
I see this package is available for Debian, and there's an Emerge for Gentoo.
Yeah, the Debian one just got into unstable. This week, again, someone else has put in all the time on us doing that part of it.
And you said you do need a GUI to set this thing up?
Well, you don't necessarily need it. When you initially start, effectively you need to configure a number of monitors, which you can think of as cameras. So you need to tell it where your cameras are, if they're video cameras, you know, what devices they are, if they're IP cameras, what their IP addresses are, and so forth. You need to do that. Now you could, if you wanted to, write directly into the database tables with that information. But most people would prefer the sort of normal GUI dialogue. So that's generally how people do it. But if you have a preset configuration, you could just dump it into a database, and then you'd be off.
I'm just curious because, you know, most people that are running a LAMP server are actually running a server and don't have a GUI on there for you to configure things.
No, well, you don't need to be on the machine. It's a web GUI, so you can do it from some other machine on your network. You don't need to be on the actual server machine.
Okay.
That makes a bit more sense.
Yeah, yeah, and the idea is that you can see it from, you know, a lot of people will have it set up so that if they're at work, they can look at the cameras at home. And now, obviously, you can set it up to email you, say, notifications if something happens, but most people would prefer to be able to log into it and use the web GUI to sort of browse what's happened and see whether the posting's been or see whether someone's tried to drop something off or, you know, that kind of thing, which is obviously, that's what the GUI is used for, but it isn't critical to the actual execution of the process. The server will pile away and monitor the cameras and check the events and do all of that stuff without you being logged in.
And I see you have event triggers.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have an algorithm to determine what the sensitivity of that.
Yeah.
And then that's adjustable, right?
Yeah. We're talking about motion detection there. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's various levels of it, of motion detection. Now, at a basic level, it all starts with the same base point, which is effectively that it takes an image. It continuously merges that image into a reference image using a certain percentage merge. So effectively, there's a reference image which changes either slowly or slightly faster, but it is an amalgam of previous images, and each image is compared to that reference image. Now, there's various stages of doing motion detection. The first one is that you could either just configure it to count the number of pixels in that image that are different by a certain amount. So if someone's walked into the center of the image, then maybe say 20 or 30% of the pixels would be very different because they're in the middle of the image now and they weren't there before. So you can either just say, well, if more than say 20 or 30% of the pixels are different, I'll consider that an alarm. Or you could decide that actually you could have a load of leaves blowing past, in which case maybe 20 or 30% Well, the pixels would again be different, but they wouldn't be contiguous. There would be no sort of continuous block of them. So you can apply other constraints to it to say, well, first of all, let's get rid of any pixels that are in tiny groups of, say, three or four pixels groups, which may be just speckles of noise or rain or things like that. So get rid of those, and then we'll see how many of those pixel changed pixels are contiguous and connected with each other. And only if we find a kind of blob of contiguous pixels do we consider that an event. So you can kind of dip out of that process wherever you like. You can say just do it on the counts of changed pixels, or you can go all the way down and say, well, it needs to be a blob, at least one blob of more than, say, 5 or 10% of the image, and that, you know, that blob is a contiguous lump of change, if you like. Now, the further down you go, the more processing power it takes. So if you had a relatively weak machine running it, you may decide just to do the simple pixel count, but most people will go for the sort of blob-based thing, which is a little better for removing false positives, really.
With regards to the development of this, how old is the project, number one, and how large is the development team?
How old? That's a good question, actually. I would say it's probably coming up to 4 years old now. I can't actually remember off the top of my head. Basically, it did start when I got when I was in a house which the garage got broken into, and a few things got stolen from the garage, which I didn't even realise until the next day. That just frustrated me that I couldn't actually. There was no way of even just seeing who might have been or up to the garage and gone in, let alone whether I'd been able to stop them or whatever. But so that was a few years ago. That's probably 3 or 4 years ago. And in terms of the development team, it's generally I'm doing most of it. Now that I find that a little bit easier to manage. I mean, there are a lot of people that help, but it is in quite an ad hoc way. There's no kind of coordinated teams like there are on some of the large projects. Most people that help kind of find their niche, so they help with the packaging or they help doing help on the forums, for instance, or help doing particular things that they have expertise in and feed those back in. But generally speaking, the core of the development is with me. Now, that's something I'm continually reviewing, and I think that I'm going to have to open it out a little bit. And part of the reason it still is a little bit parochial is essentially I've got a box with all my stuff on it, and I need to kind of get a new box and broaden things out a bit and make them a little more accessible for everyone else. So I do foresee that the team will be enlarged in the relatively near future, but then they need to address how it's all managed and so forth, and that's a little bit daunting.
This seems like a really useful project, if, say, people want to have a nanny cam, or they want to keep an eye on their kids when they come home from school, if they're if they're at work. Something like this would probably be a great idea, maybe to integrate it into some kind of home automation package. I know we interviewed the guy who's into Mr. Home. Have you ever heard of that application?
Yeah.
Something like that might be a great idea to integrate into, or some kind of a plugin or something.
It has some integration with that kind of thing already. The I think Mr. Home, among other things, it does support X10, which is basically power line switching, so you can switch stuff off by sending signals over your electrical circuitry. And there is an interface for that in there. You obviously need the hardware as well, but you can, for instance, make if a camera detects motion, you can get it to send an X10 signal to turn on some lights, for instance, or trigger anything effectively. And you can do it the other way around. So if you've got an X10 PIR type of device, then that device, if it sends an X10 signal over the power line, then that can trigger a camera to come on. So there is a degree of integration in there. for that. Now, an X10 is quite old, but it is relatively standard, so that's relatively easy to integrate. There are more generic triggers that require people to do their own kind of glue for. So if you have a particular serial device that needs, that you want to trigger, say a point of sale or that kind of thing, then generally you have to do it yourself. But that normally isn't too much work. But the home integration, the home automation integration is there. I think it probably could be enhanced a little bit. The trouble is some of that kit is actually quite expensive and it's difficult to get hold of just to play with, just to get a bit of integration going.
Have you been approached by anybody to possibly commercialize this or make a version that's commercial?
Not strictly. I mean, I have been approached by people who, say, want a particular bit of customization. They're generally going to use the GPL version, but like with the trigger, they have some particular device that they want to interface with and you know, they want a bit of help with how that device can talk to the cameras. People do get in touch and say, well, wouldn't it be nice if you could do this? And you know, we're interested in doing that. And, you know, I'm sure people have commercialized it, but quite often I don't hear back from them again. And, you know, as being as it's GPL, you know, there is no obligation on them to keep me in the loop, as it were. Obviously, if they do any changes to the source, then they're obligated to release those. But in the meantime, I'm sure people are selling systems with ZoneWinder on, whether it's customized or not. But I don't have a lot of feedback on that kind of thing.
So I assume that this is just a side project for you and not something that could become a day job.
Well, it is a side project. I mean, it isn't my day job. It doesn't really make much in the way of money. But having said that, it's a good kind of it's a good application for proving it and honing skills that apply to other work that I do. So the web interface is you know, taught me PHP to quite a large degree, and I've done quite a lot of PHP since. And so now some of the other stuff that I've been doing with other projects, I'm quite keen to feed back into ZoneWinder and keep it refreshed. If I could, I would probably do ZoneWinder stuff every day, you know, if that was cost-effective. But just because I actually quite enjoy doing it, and there are lots and lots of things. I've got a to-do list that just gets larger. It doesn't really get shorter. Yeah, because for everything that comes off the top, there's a couple more things to go on the bottom, and I can see a lot of potential with you know, with ways to develop it. But at the moment, it is still a sideline, and I do have to kind of try and ring fence time to work on it away from other work that, you know, dangles money in front of my face.
See, I what I find interesting is I have experience with a quote higher end security system that was put in place of, and I managed from a previous job, that had five cameras connected to it, accepted multiple inputs. You had the capability of going in there, it would record and archive the data, and you can go back in like half hour increments or define the increment you want to go back, the time span, and look through the video, shuttle back and forth, and if we ever needed to see, you know, something went on at this time, and we could go back and look at the security, the camera feed from that time. And it was a Windows-based system. It required, you know, it was written that it had its own graphical interface. And if you wanted to look at it other than the server, the actual system that recorded everything, you had a graphical client that you had to install on the system and look at it with. And, you know, I'm looking over your system, which you have put together here. And this system, they sell it to you, and it's, you know, a very large cost. It's a significant cost to purchase and license the software and annual updates. And I look at what your system is offering, and I'm like, man, I'm very impressed by what you have.
Well, thanks for that. It's not just me. People do feed in ideas and opinions, and we have some people who work in the security industry who you know, who feedback ideas of what security industry people would expect, and you know, I do hear reports of those kind of DVR type of things that you were just discussing in a box, and a lot of those aren't actually really, you know, up to it. So we try and do a better job, but also we try and do a flexible job. We don't try and impose things on people. If you want to use a Windows viewer to view Zoomander, then James, who's one of the people who helped me out, he's written a Windows viewer, so you can use a Windows viewer. But otherwise, you can use a GUI, web GUI from anywhere. We try and give people options, which is perhaps a little bit daunting sometimes when they look at all the different configuration things you can do, and people often ask, well, what's the hardware requirement for, you know, four cameras? And, well, there isn't one. There is not a hardware requirement. There's a spectrum. You know, if you have four cameras and they're doing one frame a second and it's a small image, pretty much anything will do it. If you're expecting 25 frames a second and it's a 640 by 480 image, then you're going to need more grunt. So we try not to impose on people a particular our vision of what they need. Trying to let people fit in with what they can afford or what they have to hand, and people feedback in. The forums are very active, and the wiki on there has been on there for about a few months to a year probably now, and people feed into that. So the community side of things does keep making things a lot easier, because you have people feeding in saying, well, this is my experience, like you've just said, you know, I have experience with this, and I'm sure it probably, as you say, probably does beat a lot of commercial systems, but I'm happy for it to be available to people to do as they want. And it's not to say that if people come to me and say, you know, we want this feature, we'll pay you a fortune to add this particular feature in, then I'm happy to accept that as well. But so far, fortunes, I'm not materializing in that way, but I'm not, you know, it doesn't bother me that much. So, I'm happy to make something that I think will be useful to people, and it is installed, as far as I can tell. The update checks and things are checking with the server. There's several thousand installations out there, and people are using it, and people report that they, that they've found somebody, you know, they've witnessed a break-in, or they've prevented a break-in, or they've managed to prosecute people who, you know, who've done something they caught on camera and so forth. And that's pretty sounds a bit sort of holier than that, but that's very rewarding, really.
You know what this is missing? I'll tell you what this is missing. In my opinion, what this is missing. This is missing a hardware implementation, like an appliance or something, that somebody to provide an appliance with this and set up a system. Because, I mean, man, it just seems like it's you know, for lack of a better word, money in a bag for you almost, or to set up a little company here. Because, I mean, I'm just really blown away. And I look at this and I say, the place that I worked at invested, I'm not a sizable chunk of money to get a system that I look at yours and say, whoa, there's a hell of a lot more flexibility here on your system, and more, you know, almost more functionality and capability with your system. At, you know, the software is nothing. The hard part would be, I think, just installing the hardware, getting the cameras up and running and configured to work with this.
Yeah.
You know, and that seems like the hard part right there. But wow.
Well, I think there's a couple of things. One is if you make it an appliance, then you do. You know, which I think, you know, I'm all for. You do then say, well, if it's in a box with, say, BNC video inputs, then generally that means you've got to use BNC video inputs. If you make it with network camera, you know, you kind of choose one or the other, and you then start to lose some of the flexibility. But I don't have a problem with people offering appliances, and maybe people do, for all I know. But the other thing really is just in terms of the capabilities of the boxes. People like appliances that are quite small, and people sell servers with it pre-installed, which is one thing. But little kind of little boxes that sit underneath your TV or whatever, sometimes they're a bit underpowered and they look nice, but they don't always materialize the performance. And the other thing is, in a commercial environment, the people often like, they want a chain of responsibility, so they want to be able to have some cast iron support, and if it goes wrong, who do they call 24/7 and so forth, and that's generally not me. I mean, I've done some and supported some installations in big companies with multi-million dollar companies, generally in America, and supported them, but generally the first line support is someone in the company who's got an interest in it in the first place, and they come to me if there's a problem. And I'm sure there are a lot of other companies that never come to me at all. So I think corporate types generally want something that's a bit more they've heard of, and that they're being sold by a big company, and it's quite a traditional industry, the security industry, as I found out. I didn't realize this initially, but the alarm and CCTV installers, they're all in trade bodies and so forth. So although it's not something I'm trying to crack, people who would be selling appliances or selling services based on this, that's the sort of thing they have to crack. So people are getting in there, but it's not quite as simple as you might think, unfortunately.
It's got to be difficult to be able to get an embedded device that would be able to, run the software and run it, as close to what you have it running on your current platform.
Yeah. Sorry, I think I heard that, but you went a bit cracky.
You basically would have to strip things down to a usable form.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, again, it depends on what people actually want. If you want to specify something that says supports four cameras at a certain number of frames per second, then that's fine. You can spec it to work with that. But as soon as then someone says, "Well, can I add another camera?" If they're in control of their own hardware, then obviously they can, or they can upgrade something to do it. If it's a black box, then that opportunity isn't there. But like I say, I don't. I'm all for appliances. I have several, squeeze boxes and slim servers and all these kind of things dotted around the house, and that's the sort of thing I very much enjoy using. So I don't have a problem with appliances at all. And there may be people that are doing them already, but again, I'm not sure that they always get fed back into me when these things sort of things happen.
Yeah, it's really, maybe appliance isn't the right thing to say. I mean, a server, the machine we had it on was a fairly recent Pentium-based system in it, with a lot of hard drive space, storage space for, recording and archiving the video. But I see a viable, potentially viable business there. But you did mention it's kind of hard to break into that whole security. I mean, you have certifications and a whole bunch of liability issues, I guess, you'd have to be insured for.
Yeah. I mean, I those aren't issues that worry me too much, because I'm not the one that's selling them to anybody in general.
Right.
I'm happy to support people. And I think people who run their own business or are the CEOs or the managing directors, if they're the people that have come across it, they're often quite happy to go for Zoneminder and do that kind of project. It's normally when there's somebody lower down who's trying to push it to somebody further up, and the person may be an enthusiast, but then they start hitting the sort of corporate walls. But from what I can tell, it's growing. The more people using it all the time, the more companies using it all the time. So there is a momentum behind it. It's just whether time will tell whether how many opportunities and businesses spawn off it, and some of them will be opportunities for other people, and some of them maybe come my way. But we will see to some extent.
So this was basically an itch you had to scratch, and you you produced with a small with a community of developers produced this really cool project. One of the questions we had come in from our forum was whether you have a specific brand of camera, a low-cost video camera that you or security camera that you recommend to use with Zone Alarm.
Right, yeah, no, it's something that, that comes up quite a lot. It does vary. The cameras generally are split into the two families. One is the normal, effectively analog video, which goes into a video capture card, which you would normally have to buy. They don't generally come in pre-installed in systems. So that's on the one side. And then IP cameras on the other side. And a lot of people now just automatically think IP cameras. But generally speaking, the analog cameras are the better cameras for external use, and they're often quite cheap. A bullet type, they're called bullet type cameras. They're effectively the size of a mini can of Coke or something like that. They're a couple inches across and 3 or 4 inches long. They're 30 odd. I'm trying to think what it would be in dollars. So $20 or $30, you could get something for that. Now you would need a capture card as well, which may set you back $50 to $100. It depends on the number of chips on the capture card and how fast you want the video to be captured. So those are the analog type of cameras. They're cheaper, and as they only have an analog video interface, they all effectively present the same interface. So it doesn't really matter what you get from that. If you've got a cheap one, it generally will work. Now, the more you pay for them, the better the features are, the better the low light performance will be. But that's not particularly sort of brand specific as such. On the other side, IP cameras, the sort of main flagship brand of IP cameras that I tend to use is the Axis ones. Axis, I think they're Swedish, but they're certainly not cheap. They do a really good job of good quality image. They do a good job of developer support, so their developer pages are pretty comprehensive, which makes it easy for me to develop against them. There's a bunch of Panasonic cameras, IP cameras, and they're pretty good as well. They're a little bit cheaper, and there's some good panning and pan tilt zoom cameras, which they do, which are again better for indoor use than outdoor use. An IP camera for outdoor use, you either have to get an enclosure for it, generally external enclosure, or you have to get a more expensive one to put outside. But for indoors, pretty much any of them would do. And there are a whole bunch of more generic IP cameras, that some of which work and some of which don't. At the moment, some cameras will only do an MPEG stream out, and at the moment, ZoneMinder will not support an MPEG stream as an input. It's coming, but it's not quite there yet, because nobody seems to do it in the same way. Everyone seems to do it in a slightly different way, so it's difficult to find a method that works with all of them. But most IP cameras will let you will supply a JPEG stream, or even just a still stream, and that, as long as they do one or two of those things, that's fine. The only other thing you have to be careful of is that some of them have proprietary kind of ActiveX Internet Explorer specific interfaces, and they're just non-starters. But even some of those have a path to an image stream that you can get. You can get around the ActiveX stuff. That's just all bells and whistles you don't need. So it's a little bit difficult. The forums on the website, zoneminder.com website, there are sections for hardware, and supported hardware and queries, and it does change rather a lot. I don't tend to keep up with them on a daily basis, because the actual hardware issues is not something that I tend to focus on. But you can do it pretty cheaply nowadays compared to what it was even a year or two ago, when it would cost you a few hundred dollars really for cameras. Now you can get a couple of cameras and a capture card probably for $100 or so. But that will be quite low quality. But for most people, that's possibly all they really need.
Now, since you've been running your zone alarm and your cameras, have you caught your cat doing anything inappropriate?
Well, that's a good question. No, I'm not sure I've caught the cat doing very much. I've caught a few other odds and ends going on, but mostly wildlife. You get birds that come and fly up on them, and in the night, if you've got infrared cameras, they tend to attract spiders, so you get this little dance of a sort of white blobby spider going diagonally backwards and forwards across your camera, spinning a web. And you get to see things like foxes and other sort of nocturnal creatures and that sort of stuff. But I'm afraid, no, probably fingers crossed, I've not heard anything that particularly notable to report, really. But I mean, primarily, I just check that someone hasn't been to deliver stuff and whether the postman's been or whether the kids have got back from school and that kind of mundane stuff. And once you do that for a while, it becomes habit forming, and you almost feel blind when you can't do it. If I do something to my server like I've been doing today, which knocks out the network interface by a mistake, and suddenly I can't see any of the cameras, and it does. You know, you kind of feel that you're a little bit blind. You're totally cut off. So it is quite addictive, and it is quite fun. Sometimes it is quite fun. I've got a couple of cameras that have remote control panning and tilting, and you can control that through the web interface. And that's sometimes fun, just to sort of scoot it around outside, see what's going on, and zoom backwards and forwards and have a look around, or zoom onto a tree and watch some birds in the nest box, that sort of stuff. You know, and people do that. People put cameras in things like nest boxes and in zoos and wildlife reserves and that sort of stuff, with aquariums as well. So it's not all kind of serious stuff.
Have you ever used it to, you're sitting in your room or somewhere in your house, and someone rings your doorbell, and you look and you see it's like your neighbor or, you know, one of your friends stopped by, and you don't want to talk to them, so you just don't answer the door?
Well, not neighbors, no, but I think we do Halloween over here is starting to get a bit like American Halloween, so every now and again, if the trick-or-treaters coming up and you think, or actually it's more often Christmas carolers, if it's just teenagers who not even dressed up or anything, and they just want to sing you two lines of a Christmas carol and expect to give you them money, then no, I'll check that, and then we'll just sort of sit quietly until they go away.
Or you need a button that you could press on the screen that would either spray them with water or a lightning bolt would shock them.
Yeah. Well, I should probably shouldn't say this, but what I would like to do is put onto one of the movable cameras. It's put on just like one of those little laser pointers. So if there's people sort of hanging around outside you don't like the look of, you can kind of pan around and they'll see the little red dot, you know, chase around them.
Little gunfire speakers.
I think I'd probably get into a bit of trouble if I started directing lasers at people.
Little speaker that yells, "Get off my lawn."
Yeah. Well, I know someone on the forums this week, he's got a pond, and so he wants to do effectively a motion detection. When you set a camera up for motion detection, you can set it up to just detect motion in particular bits of the frame. So just over one part or over another part, or distinguish between the two. But he effectively wants to set up motion detection to catch herons, and he actually wanted to detect where the heron was and point some squirty kind of thing at the heron or the cat, and and direct it based on where the motion was, which I think possibly is a little bit ambitious for just, you know, you may as well just squirt water everywhere, but trying to get a remote controlled water jet thing hooked into it is probably not something that too many people have done before, but
that's just a weekend of coding.
Yes, well, the software part of it's easy actually. It's actually getting something in the hardware that will turn that hose pipe to point to a particular coordinate that's on the screen. I think that was probably where his work lay.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean the interfacing is fairly easy. If you want to interface something that's not been done before, you are going to be involved in a little bit of coding, but there is a, a kind of framework, an API framework for external triggering, either of triggers coming in to set the cameras doing something or the cameras trigger something out. That's relatively easy. You can do it over a socket or over a serial interface or to a file, and most other systems will respond to one or the other of those interfaces. So as long as you're happy to do a little bit of glue coding just to convert the internal trigger to whatever sequence your external device wants to hear, then it is relatively easy. And things like point style systems, or I've done those before, where you would record a what was sold on a till, for instance, as an overlay onto the image, and store it in the event. So those, you know, that's an external triggering application that has a bit more of a sort of commercial slant, really. But you could quite easily set that to be something a bit more trivial.
So, are you a programmer by day?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. I do those odds and ends. It's a little bit of my background in programming, which wasn't what I originally started off doing, but my background in programming was kind of real-time and telecoms-y kind of applications. And then I went off to do a year or two at another job, which was a bit more of a web type of application. So that was happening just as I was starting on ZoneMinder. So that's kind of where the synthesis of those two sides of it came into it, because ZoneMinder is a fast real-time, effectively real-time, it's not true real-time, but effectively optimized processing engine, which is written in C++, along with a web interface, which is written in PHP, and which has to interact with the C++ applications, along with a bunch of scripts, which are written in Perl, which again interact with each other, really. So it's that kind of fusion, which the last few things I did kind of came together to spawn. So, but I mean, nowadays I do all sorts of different things, really. I don't generally work. I work for myself, effectively, so I do bits of contract work and things. And I enjoy doing the web stuff, actually, probably more than the other stuff at the moment, just because it's a little bit more immediate. But it's good to keep... I do some real-time embedded work as well. So I keep my finger in a few pies.
Do you do development then? What do you do development in for ZoneMinder? Is that for you do that in Linux?
Yeah, I mean, effectively, yeah. The ZoneMinder C++ is obviously written just in a text editor, so I don't tend to use any kind of IDE. So I just write that on a normal terminal connection. And the same with the web stuff, really. I don't use any kind of IDE for the web or the scripting sort of things. I guess it comes from when I started originally, there weren't any, and I found them a little bit constraining. So the vast majority of it is done over an SSH session into a terminal, which I can do pretty much from anywhere, which is the way I like it, really.
So then with your consulting, do you do all your work in a Linux environment, or?
Mostly, yeah. I mean, I do. I use Windows PCs as a sort of client, effectively. So, and from there, I log onto Linux clients to do various bits of work. I have a laptop which runs Windows, just because that's kind of what I'm used to for mail and stuff like Thunderbird and stuff like that. And you can get those on Linux as well, but there's always something that I find that I can't get. So the client side of it is either Windows or one or other flavor of Linux, but it's nearly always just remotely logging into a Linux box of one sort or another. The other, pretty much everything I do is on Linux servers. So all the web work is on LAMP servers. And the development, the other type of development work is generally on a one of the other flavors of Linux, either a normal Intel-type Linux server or an ARM Linux, embedded Linux platform. So I don't really do any, I don't do any web Windows development. It's all Linux development. But how I get onto the box varies depending on what I'm doing.
That's pretty interesting.
Well, I'm sort of, you know, I've been doing it for a while. I'm a little bit set in my ways, so I think people who do it now are a little bit more kind of, they sort of embrace things a little bit quicker, whereas I'm a bit set in my ways. So GUI development, I just don't get on with. I've tried it enough times, especially the web stuff. But now I just find it much easier just to do it in text and just, you know, hit save, hit F5 in the browser, does it right? Nope. Quick edit, hit save, F5 in the browser, does it right? Yeah, that looks okay. And once you've done it for a while, you can predict pretty much what it's going to look like. And again, with the core C++ stuff, I do tend to use a set of C++ that, you know, I've used before. New elements to C++, so I'm a little bit more reluctant to dive into. So it's more like a C-flavored C++ rather than all the latest stuff with templates and stuff. Although I have used them, I tend to find that they make debugging a bit more difficult and they make the code bigger and they don't necessarily make it any faster. And so I do try and keep everything as minimal as I can. But I think that's probably my sort of background and the length of time I've been doing it, really.
So what's your ideal development environment? What kind of editor do you use?
I use Vi. So that would be my development environment. Although I am painfully aware that there's a huge amount of Vi I don't know that I ought to learn, really. Because I do occasionally hit keystrokes by accident, and I think, that was really clever. It just found something near my cursor and went and found the previous instance of it and deleted what was in between. I wish I knew how I could actually do that. So I use Vi, but I'm certainly no means I'm a Vi expert. It's just one of those things. Your fingers learn a few set key sequences, even though they're not the most logical. And, you know, you get set in your ways a little bit. So in terms of development environment, there's not really any development environment on the client side. So just remotely logging in and using C++ as the compiler, or then PHP and MySQL. I use a few tools for database development. I do quite a lot of database work and on various people's websites and so forth. And I do use a couple of tools for doing the database visualization and relationship building, just because I think that's a bit easier to actually see directly. But that's pretty much the only thing I use any kind of GUI, kind of graphical kind of element for.
Seems like a great project.
Say it again.
It seems like a real great project. I'm going to start looking into this stuff to play around with it. It looks really interesting.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're obviously welcome to have it. Like I said, there are various ways of getting it. If you don't want to go to the trouble of building from source, then there are RPMs for Fedora and they work on CentOS as well. And there's guides for installing it on other systems, or the live CD, which you can download, which will do a whole system for you if you just want to try it out. Effectively, you can get something up and going in very little time, but as with quite a few things, if you put in a bit more time, then you can usually get something that works a little bit better for you, or you can find some other things you can do that you didn't realize. We get a lot of questions on the forums, you know, which are things that are people didn't realize it could do. It's nice to be able to say you can already do that. You know, when they say, can we have this feature? Say, well, that's already in there. So there is quite a lot to it, and there's quite a lot coming up. There's a lot of stuff that's going to go in the next couple of releases, and a lot of things to add. I only wish I had a little bit more time to spend on it, because I'd say we could really get some good stuff in there.
How is the, in your opinion, how is the Linux scene over there in the United Kingdom? Or actually, maybe not just Linux, but the free and open source software scene over there, where you're at?
I think it's pretty much the same as what you've got. There's quite a lot of awareness of it in the normal sort of development community. There's growing awareness of it in the normal commercial environment. I've done various jobs, development jobs, which are based around it. So it's very common to find it in commercial environments. And in terms of governments and so forth, it's being adopted in various places. It's all a little bit piecemeal, probably still. But it's probably Europe is a little bit more forward than most other parts of the world in terms of their preference for open source and free open source software. They have their little spats with Microsoft, the EU, and I think that helps them to kind of focus on free and open source. I know in Germany, in Munich, and various other places, intended to convert their whole systems to Linux, and there are places in UK that are looking at the same sort of thing. So there is a growing awareness. You know, I think it's probably still the same as most places, in that your average consumer probably is not so aware of it, and they still think Windows first, and they go to their local store for Windows software to do this, that, and the other. So in terms of the end consumer, it's probably still a little bit more directed towards the hobbyist, but there's a lot of advocates, and it doesn't take many bad experiences with systems crashing and going down and losing everything for you to be able to say to someone, oh, here you go, try this, it's free. If all you're doing is reading mail and browsing, have a go at this, it's actually, it's just stable, you're not going to get caught with anything. And that does wear off on people. So I think we're probably more or less in the same stage as you are over there, I think.
You going to Lug Radio Live this year?
No. Have I done a lot, do you say, or have I?
No, I mean, are you going to be going to Lug Radio Live?
Oh, sorry, no. I have to confess I've not heard of it. Well, could you tell me a little bit?
Have you ever heard of Lug Radio?
Yeah.
Okay, they do a what's the word I'm looking for? It's kind of like, what do we call Linux World or Linux Ohio Linux Fest or Scale? It's kind of like a conference down there in Wolverhampton. Is it in Wolverhampton this year again?
Yeah, it's Wolverhampton.
Yeah, they do it sometime around June or, the end of spring, early summer. And they have a really, really great turnout, wonderful speakers, both commercial and community. Vendors there. And supposedly, it sounds like a wonderful thing to go to. Unfortunately for us, it's across the big pond to get there, and a little costly, but it sounds like a good time by all.
It's not too far away from me, actually, that. So I've just made a little note to have a look at that.
Yeah, if you listen to Lug Radio, or head over to lugradio.org, they've been talking it. They usually spend the next 4 months talking about it, and then it comes out, but they'll definitely be posting it when it is. And
yeah.
they're actually looking for guests, for presenters. And
are they?
Yeah, if you're at all interested, I'm sure they would love to have you.
I have done a few little talks about various things in the past, and it's usually quite funny. If it's a little bit worrying when you're leading up to it, but once you get going, I find it's quite fun.
Yeah, so
I'll go have a look at that.
Definitely, and if you would present there, I think that would be great. Unfortunately, I wouldn't be able to watch it, but maybe I can get the video or audio of it afterwards, because they do post that. But it's Sounds like an awesome event.
Right, okay. Well, I certainly will have a look. Thanks for the tip there. I will have a look at that.
Anytime. That's what we're here for. And, you know, thank you for doing a great job on ZoneMinder. And I hope that we have a bunch of listeners, you know, check the project out, maybe, you know, do some contributions to it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm very grateful to you for inviting me on, really. It's, you know, it's nice to get the opportunity to, especially, you know, a whole hour just to talk about it. And to a little bit of advocacy, I do. It certainly doesn't hurt to get the word out, really.
And I want to thank your telephone company and your telephone for providing great audio. It was great.
Well, I'll pass that on to them.
Yep. And I want to thank you for coming on. I mean, by all means, we're not kicking you off, but we also know that it's pretty late over there in the United Kingdom. So, you know, and you probably have to work tomorrow. We don't want to hold you up. But, you know, you're willing to stay on as long as you want.
Yeah, okay, well, I'm okay for a couple of minutes. I'm just looking at the cat, and she's looking like she wants to go to bed, so...
Looking at the cat?
Well, I have a cat, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay. That's what I thought you said, the cat. I didn't know if you said somebody's name or the cat. How old's the cat?
No, there's nobody else here, just me. Nobody else but me and the cat at the moment. Everyone else is in bed.
How old's the cat?
She's about 14, so she's no spring chicken. We had two, and one of them was in the... were screenshots which were that I first put up for ZoneMinder, so he was kind of featured in them, in the snapshots of motion detection stuff. That sadly we don't have him anymore, but one, the other one's hanging around, and she's been in a few of the shots as well. It's for long, you know, a lot of the time you can't get anything else to actually move in there, and you don't necessarily want your own face in the cameras on the website, so. You'd be sort of like kick something else into the screen to get your screenshot.
Yeah, I love cats. So now, does your whole family use Linux over there?
No, I'm afraid I can't say that they do. My wife works for a big international corporate company, so they're Windows wedded right from the word go. I mean, she does use Linux without realizing it sometimes, because she has to get onto the server to do various bits and pieces, and our audio is all streamed out of a Slim server, which is on the Linux box upstairs, and you know, so she uses it without realizing it. The kids do now and again. The kids, I've got two children. I've got a laptop with Ubuntu on it, and they quite like using that, but. I'm not quite sure they're even aware of the difference yet. You know, they think it just looks a little bit different, so I don't really want to hammer it too hard on them at the age they're at. I would like them to get the choice. And obviously, I think schools generally, we did go into the school to talk about various choices my son has to make for the next couple of years of his schooling, and they were talking about doing ICT, which is their... computer kind of courses, and they were saying what's a good course, and they're going to do some web work in Front Page, and when they saw me sort of roll my eyes, they said, well, Microsoft gives them it effectively for nothing, and if they used anything else they'd have to pay for it, so you know, there's still work to be done.
You don't have to pay for VI.
No, you don't. I'm not sure how it would grab the attention of 13-year-olds. But, you know, I think they want to present something a little bit more visual to them. But, yes, I did try and suggest some alternatives to them. So, we should see. I'm sure it. Our schools, you know, are going to Linux in various places, but it's certainly not widespread.
Yeah.
It's happening slowly.
Yeah. Yeah. And people should do it when they see the advantage of it, really, rather than just because they're, you know, told to do it or whatever. You know, and people will see the advantage of it as they get used to using it. But it is a little bit difficult to explain to people, and then when people can get confused by the different options they have to get things. And one, I I use Linux a lot, but I nearly always use it on a terminal, remotely logged in, because I can't, I hate, if I use a GUI, if I have to choose between something like a GNOME or KDE, I think, well, what am I going to choose? Whichever one I choose, there's actually something on the other one I like more. So in some ways, having too much choice, you know, it just means I don't use either of them.
Use Enlightenment.
Pardon?
Use Enlightenment.
Yeah, well, I could, yeah, there you go, there's another one. So, you know, with something like Ubuntu, if I install it, there it is, it comes up. I don't even know which one of them it is. But if I had to, like, make a decision myself, I'll pick one to install on something else, then, you know. And I like things to work on one computer. I like whatever I've got on one computer, I like to have be able to use exactly the same thing on another computer, and exactly the same thing on another computer. I don't want to have to keep changing between all the different things that I've got. So, you know, when I pick one, that's it, wedded for life, basically. So, but, you know, that's the sort of thing that other people, when they're confronted with, and they've got no previous knowledge to suggest something to them, then that, you know, that's when it becomes difficult for them. And you know, a lot of people have enough trouble with Windows, really, without, you know, where they have little choice. When confronted with choice, that sometimes isn't, you know, that isn't something that they feel they're comfortable with making.
You know, you seem to have your finger on the pulse of the web development community there. And maybe you can lend some credibility or deniability to this, but I thought I heard a little while ago that Microsoft was no longer going to produce Front Page.
Well, I'm not really sure, because they do these other things, don't they? I think there's Publisher is another one, and I did, which is a part of Office, I think, and I did come across a website a week or two ago, which was written Publisher, and it just didn't work whatsoever in Firefox, and this was effectively an e-commerce site where they were trying to sell something, and none of them, you couldn't click on anything, and I had to then look at the source to even find a hint of a link, and then when I downloaded the source to have a look at it, and it was something like 70 kilobytes, of which probably the first 40 were a stream of styles which would maybe be used in one, you know, in for one character in the text below, and it just kind of didn't work. So hopefully they're not going to that, because that was even worse.
Well, that's a sign of quality web development with standards based in mind.
Yes, we have a different style for every character.
That's progress.
But it was a very simple page, but I was astounded by it, really. It's so much easier nowadays than even a couple of years ago to produce a page that is very simple and and works well. I look at some of the ZoneMinder web stuff, which isn't complicated by any means. But now I look at it and I think, God, you know, if I did that, start that now, I would have done it. You know, I would have done it with styles. And when I did start it, they weren't, style support wasn't so good. You know, I could cut the pages down by 60 or 70% in some cases, and just make it so much neater and so much more skinnable. And so that's one of the sort of projects on the horizon is to add all that. Because people do, there are a couple of contributed different GUI looks. Not necessarily the full GUI, but a few of the pages, and I do want to make it easier for people to have it looking how they want. You know, but even myself, having done it a couple of years ago, I think, well, now it just looks, you know, antiquated in some respects. I'm not, don't want to slag off my own stuff too much, but it is so much easier now to just separate, you know, get your content in there, and then paste the styles on afterwards, and make things look really good. One of my little hobbies is going to these. There's quite a few style, style sheet type pages, like the Zen Garden, CSS Zen Garden stuff, and just look at those and get some ideas from those, because some of them are just gorgeous.
Yes, they are.
But again, yeah, I do bang my head against the wall with style sometimes, placements and stuff. But it's a goal worth pursuing, I think.
Yeah, and I think, you know, where I work and where they do watching the front-end guys with the web development, they're always banging their heads with styles, particularly trying to make them work properly in, like, Internet Explorer 6 and 7.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's always fun.
Yeah, isn't it? Now, are you concerned so much about with ZoneMinder about the web pages working properly in, like, all browsers, or do you focus specifically on, like, Firefox?
Well, I am concerned to some degree, but not exclusively, really. I know there are a few pages which really don't work. Well, there's actually probably only one view that doesn't work very well in Internet Explorer, because that's heavily built up from styles, although it's not a style page. It has a graph which is built up from styles, and that doesn't render very well on Internet Explorer. Now, I would like to get that working, and I think I've figured out a couple of reasons why it didn't work. So that's something I will be looking at, but I don't, although I do test stuff in Internet Explorer, I don't generally test it in Safari on a Mac or something. I have access to those sort of things, but I don't want to spend all my time trying to iron out little wrinkles in different browsers. So I generally do it in Firefox, and Firefox supports stuff like the motion JPEG and multi-part JPEG streaming natively, whereas Internet Explorer you have to have a plug-in, which means that if you want to do anything nice with those images, like make them clickable, then that becomes a little bit fiddly. So ZoneMinder does support using those sort of plugins, and it does it effectively invisibly, so the user doesn't necessarily, the user can use it pretty much 96% of it on Internet Explorer. So it's something I keep in mind, but if there's something that doesn't work exactly right in Internet Explorer, then I probably will just release it and say this doesn't work exactly right in Internet Explorer. And that's even more complicated now, because now there's 7 out, so you've got to test it in 6 and 7, and it's not necessarily very easy to have those. Having two of them on one machine is pretty much impossible, I understand. So then you've got to have two machines around there that have them on and make sure it's set up correctly and so forth. So it is a chore. And if I was a web development company, then that was something I would concentrate on. But as it's something that's out there that people can try, I'm always welcome for people to feedback any modifications that they want to do so on the GUI. But generally, that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, but it's important that they learn the front page in schools right away.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's important that they learn web stuff right away, and my kids have been doing kind of little web pages on various sites and sort of personal things for a few years now. So, I mean, it's good to engage them, and I suppose at the age they are, then it doesn't really matter what they're doing them in to some extent, as long as they're engaged in the process and don't get turned off it. But there will come a time when I think they'll have to be educated or re-educated.
Yeah, it could be worse. They could be using, like, MySpace to create web pages.
They could be, and they probably are. But
in school.
I don't think they've quite gone to that yet. No, most of their pages are just pictures of themselves and or their friends, and with some horrendous music playing in the background and a bunch of rather odd-looking smiley dotted around the place.
As long as they're having fun and learning something.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's good that they feel they can do that and put themselves out there, really. It's just it's something you've got to keep a little bit of an eye on.
And, you know, that's kind of the thing. There aren't, I mean, aside from FrontPage and Dreamweaver and whatever Adobe's product is, there aren't really any WYSIWYG editors under Linux except for NVU and Amaya.
Yeah.
But NVU is kind of getting stale. It's not being developed.
No. There used to be, I may be getting this wrong, but didn't the original Netscape have a Netscape kind of editor on it?
Yeah, that's what, they spun that out, and that's what NVU took over was.
Oh, was it? Right.
Yeah, NVU, and they really haven't put out a new version of NVU in almost 2 years now. But I mean, it's decent. It does a decent job, but and it's free. You can't beat that. But
no.
I found that it doesn't open PHP files in Linux or OS X. It will in Windows, it'll open, but in Linux or OS X, it keeps asking you to pull up a default editor for it.
Yeah. And PHP type of development is difficult anyway in a GUI because you've got the back end there anyway. It's not going to look right. And any conditional stuff is just going to be splurged out anyway. And with doing things with the separation of content and style, can't really, it's difficult for you to sort of say, well, make that text, you know, orange or whatever, and then effectively when you make some other text orange, say, well, what I actually really meant was that both of them should be the same style. And, you know, I think it is easier almost to just write all the, do all the writing in whatever text editor you've got, you know, and then do all the styles afterwards, and, you know, and do it in a non kind of WYSIWYG way, but that's just because I prefer that doesn't mean to everyone does.
Well, you know, that's kind of what I see a lot of developers that I work with will look at you cross-eyed if you say something like Dreamweaver or forbid Front Page, you know, that way. They're like, every one of them has their own preferred text editor for doing all
the
HTML and JavaScript and PHP.
Well, I've got Dreamweaver and every now and again, I get this urge to kind of prove myself as someone with some kind of graphical design talent, and so I have a go at it, and then it just all falls in a heap, and I realise that actually I've got no graphical design talent whatsoever, and I'm better off just doing everything in text. So really, all I ever use it for is just if someone says, you know, can you look at this page or whatever. And, you know, then it's useful for decoding existing pages, but I don't know why I keep it because I don't use it very often.
Yeah, that's the thing, though. I was going to say that's the thing. Web design is a whole different animal than web development.
Yeah, it is. And I'm full of admiration for people who can come up with the ideas, you know, and make it look really good. And I can plug stuff in. Make it work once there's a nice template, and that's I could do that in no time at all. But actually coming up with the ideas and implementing them, people can do it, you know, people I've worked with could do it in a couple of hours. They come up with this really nice design and it's all blended together and all the, I think 5 miles, you know, I wish I could do that.
What's your opinion of Flash?
I don't like it. I quite like it for games. It's quite, you get some quite good Flash games. But other than that, I find it intensely annoying because I do tend to, if I'm browsing, if I'm looking at a page and I see a link I like, I normally just right-click on it and say open it in a new tab, and you can't do that in Flash.
That is annoying.
And if you go to Macromedia, I don't know if they still do, Macromedia, if you went to order something, for instance, for Dreamweaver, their order process is all in Flash. And I've got... this thing, I use this thing called RoboForm, which is a form filler. You only have to fill in all your details once. So every time you come across a form, you know, you click fill my details in and off it goes. And that's, of course, that doesn't work on Flash, so you have to go write everything out longhand again. I find it annoying. And also, if you're looking at it in a Linux browser or something, half the time it hasn't got a Flash plugin. And when you go to download the Flash plugin, it says it didn't work or something or other. No, it doesn't annoy me.
What do you think about one of the things on the net that's been really kind of troublesome is videos and being able to get legal video codec support, and you know, Flash is one of the avenues that we do have that's a legal way for watching videos.
Yeah, that's true. And to be fair, that you can in ZoneMinder you can view things in Swift format. No, I'm not sure if it's called Swift format or whether there's another name for the Flash video, but you can specify that you want it in the Flash video format, and that will stream, and it will stream to a Flash player if you have that built in. So you can use it as one of the video streaming methods, which, you know, actually does work quite well for that part of it. And I don't have a problem with Flash for that, and I don't have a problem with Flash for graphical games. There's some beautiful games out there I'm sure there's some nice little applications out there, but just from a pure web page, replacement of HTML in a web page, then it does drive me nuts.
Yeah. Well, we got Fluendo.
Yeah.
So what do you think about the whole proprietary versus open arguments with regards to Linux? Do you think we should allow closed source, you know, be receptive to closed source software / drivers? You know, kind of two different topics there, but how do you feel about that?
I mean, I don't tend to get involved too much in the nitty gritty politics of it. I mean, I have opinions on the sort of broad sweep of it. I'm totally in favour of Linux and the open source community. Things like whether someone should bundle an NVIDIA card driver because it's a closed source driver. Well, you know, I mean, it would be nice if it wasn't a closed source driver, but it's a video driver. If you've got a card and you want to use a driver and it's made by somebody and they're supplying you with the software, I don't really see that it's the biggest issue in the world if they won't let you see the source of the software. So, you know, maybe nice if they did, but it's not worth getting too upset about. I mean, I guess people have a right to offer software that's open or closed source. You don't have to take it. It's only when it becomes effectively forced on you that there is a problem. And part of what I do is to give people an option, an alternative. And a lot of what I do with other software that I've got, which is open source, is find the bit I don't like and change it. And, you know, I'm not alone in that. And it's frustrating when you can't do that with other software. But I suppose you can't say to people you've got to release your source. You know, I don't think you'd want to, really. So I'm all for open source stuff. But if people want to use other closed source stuff, as long as it's not derived from other people's open source work, obviously, then it's sort of take it or leave it, really, I think. I probably don't spend as much time thinking about this sort of thing as I should.
Fair enough. Question from the forum. What distributions are you using of Linux?
Generally speaking, I tend to develop on Fedora. That just because my background has been with Red Hat, and it's when I know where everything is. I've got a new development box on order, which should be coming in a couple of weeks because my old box is a bit creaky, and when I'm testing things, I have to shut down my own system. So I'm getting a new box, and I plan to run a lot of virtual distributions, VMware type stuff. So I want to be able to test on a broader range of distributions myself. Having said that, there are people who do the live CD, for instance, is based on Nopix. It's DevMind now in Debian, and there are a lot of people who use Debian, Ubuntu. And generally speaking, you don't really need to make any changes. It's only the startup scripts, the initialization scripts that go in, etc., and so forth, that sometimes need a few wrinkles. So I tend to do my stuff on Fedora, but I've installed it on other distributions as well, and I tend to let people who are experts in those other distributions suggest the changes, which I then will include. So it's actually available in lots of distributions, and people have put it on Slackware, people have put it on FreeBSD, all sorts of different things, really. I forgot what it's called. There's a Brazilian one, which is very popular in Brazil. Someone's done a port to that, effectively, with the Brazilian language as the default language rather than as an option. So it's available on lots of different distributions, but I tend to develop on Fedora.
Fedora. I heard the new version of Fedora is really nice. It was a Fedora.
Red Hat just came out today, didn't it?
Did it?
Red Hat 5.
Yeah. Oh, did it? Well, I mean, it's some. That's one thing I'm not so keen on at Fedora, is that you do get a new version every 6 months or so, but I think that's the same with, you know, Ubuntu and all of them now, and unless you stick with something like CentOS. But there's nearly always something else I want to do on the machine or try out, which means that running an Enterprise Linux or CentOS type of thing, you know, it's not available on, and then you have to go and build it yourself or find some other distribution, that find out some other repository that's got it, and it's actually easier just to do it on, just to use a newer distribution, but it is a bit of a drag when you have to update them all the time. I've installed it, and I run it on Red Hat, on Enterprise Linux and CentOS, and they obviously work perfectly well. Just for development, I might prefer something a little bit more cutting edge so I can get some new stuff down on and try it with that. But I will be trying the new Fedora, and I quite like Red Hat Enterprise Linux, although it was a bit of a drag having to use up to date instead of yum initially, and you know, there are a few things that annoy me about it.
Fedora. You know, we speaking of Fedora and Red Hat, and by Red Hat 5 you mean Red Hat Enterprise Linux, of course, Pat. Right.
Of course.
Yes. We get an occasional email into us, and we've seen this happen so many times at our Linux meetings, our LUG meetings, and in the past, where somebody, you know, who has some older hardware takes an interest in Linux, and because they hear that it can revive older hardware, which is true. I mean, the footprint of a Linux distribution is can be generally smaller than the current footprint of OS X or Windows at the time, but they're looking at, like, you know, they're come out with a Pentium 3600 megahertz machine and then want to install the latest Mandriva on it and only having 64 megs of RAM or 32 megs of RAM or something, you know, like that, and expect it to run, you know, lickety-split compared to something like, I don't know, Windows 95 or 98, which was originally on the machine at the time. And just a little word of advice there. Some of the, you know, a new distribution on a significantly older piece of hardware may not be the best choice unless you're going with a slim distribution like Damn Small Linux, Puppy Linux. Slackware tends to run fairly well. Vector Linux, some of those not as, quote, popular as versions of Linux like Ubuntu, Fedora, or Mandriva, that those tend to work a little better and be a little easier to slip onto an older, lower-end system. So for those who have emailed us, and there was a person who did recently talking about how, you know, they were wanting to optimize their Red Hat, and I think he was using version 9, which is not a fairly new distribution, but I assume he was installing Red Hat 9. Default window manager or desktop environment on that is GNOME with, if I'm not mistaken, was a Blue Curve theme. And he was on a Pentium 600 machine with 64 megs of RAM, and he said it was, you know, kind of slow and pokey. And I would suspect that he might, one, want to choose a slimmer desktop environment and or a distribution more targeted to a lower-end system, like those we mentioned.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, also, you can get, if you want to use it as, a firewall or router, you obviously can get distributions tailored just to that particular function. I use Smoothwall Express a lot.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, and those are really good because you get the distribution. It's pretty small, usually. Put it on, and then if you happen to want to do something slightly different, you still have the flexibility to get on there and install your own stuff or do your own modifications.
That is true. Yeah, right. You know, you can make a firewall out of a 486, but you don't want to install the, you know, latest Red Hat on it. There's a Smoothwall, which works. FreeSCO is another one that I've used in the past that works. That does a damn good job of, you know, being specific, you know, almost like an appliance and geared towards the project that you want to develop out of that.
Yeah, yeah. And you find a lot of, I've got a couple bits of kit. I've got a Buffalo link station, which was a network disk, which is only 250 gig disk. But there was, you can get into that, albeit it was a slightly roundabout route, but you could get into the, get onto that and put your own server, so you could put, say, a Slim server on that. You know, so you buy it as a disk, and it's an appliance. You know, it doesn't come with any access, but there are ways of getting onto it, and then you can start using it as a small system. And I've just got a bigger an inference NAS thing, and people have found ways onto that. So a lot of kit is now coming with Linux as the core of it anyway. So, you know, with small distributions and you know, and you can get onto that and do your own homebrewing effectively on there. So it's not just a sort of, it's not just a sort of hobbyist type of thing. Actual consumer grade gear is coming with Linux on it, and knowledge of Linux helps you customize those sort of things as well.
So you running a Barrel or Compiz at all?
Sorry, just that again.
Have you been running Barrel or Compiz at all?
No, I don't think so. What are they?
It's the 3D enhanced desktops.
Right. Oh no, no.
The Cube.
No, I haven't actually. And I've just spec'd this system out, which is going to be my new development system, and it's taking me a long time to get a graphics card that doesn't have a fan on it.
Yeah.
I just want, you know, because I want it to be relatively quiet. I want it to sit there quietly, and they just can't get them. So they've all got 12 pipes and goodness knows how many, you know, mega GPUs and stuff on it, and then you have to get an extra fan. So eventually I did find one that's just air-cooled with fins. But it is difficult to find something that is just going to give you effectively a VGA, because it's a headless server. I don't need the GUI very much. So, no, I've not tried any of the 3D GUIs. I would like to give one a go, but I'm pretty sure my laptop wouldn't be up to it. I'm not sure my current desktop would either.
I've been using Barrel at work, actually. I turned it on the other day on my system, and it's been really stable. I mean, it's worked really great. I got the cool effects, the cube. I like being inside the cube instead of outside the cube. I have it on the random desktop effects when you open an application. Well, actually, when you close an application, it cycles through randomly of different kind of closed features. It'll burn up in flames or explode or do all these nifty things. It's definitely fun, and you know, people come over and they're like, "Oh wow, that's pretty cool. What's going on there?" And you sit there and you just sit there opening and closing application, you know, like a terminal window, so you can just show them all these cool effects that go on, and everybody, it's like really fun. And then a guy across from me has got like this latest state of the art system with the it's an HP with an Intel the newest Intel chipset, the 9.85 or 9.15 or something like that. I'm not sure what it is, but unfortunately the driver's a little buggy for that, and he can't get the 3D effects working because OpenGL and Mesa is having issues with the driver, and hopefully that'll be fixed in a newer version. He's kind of bummed out that he can't get the Barrel effects running.
Do you find it actually, you know, there's any kind of productivity or any kind of practical use for it, or is it just sort of like fun?
No, I do find there is use. I mean, I'm a big fan of virtual desktops, and I like to have like four or five desktops running at the same time and switching between them. And, you know, Barrel does it does a fairly decent job. But some of the features on there, particularly being able to go up and show all your applications at one time in like a kind of I guess Apple calls it expose, in that kind of view.
Yeah,
and you actually get a live view of what's going on. If I wanted to actually, if I'm working on something and I wanted to see whether a process or whatever I was doing in a window behind it was finished or not, I could just easily, instead of bringing that window up, like fade out the current window I'm working in so it's a little opaque, a little translucent, and see in real time what's going on behind it. And I can continue working like that, or I can increase the opacity so I don't see as much behind it. There's really great zoom features and accessibility features in there for people who have vision problems with working with the 3D effects. But there's a lot of stuff in there that's kind of frivolous, but just fun to do. But I do think there is some functionality benefits.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would, one of these things that's on the sort of to-do list that just rarely get a chance to actually do, because you kind of need to see someone else with it on, like, you know, and say, well, that's worth trying, because it's difficult to keep up with everything.
Yeah, it's definitely an attention getter, though, too.
Yeah.
It's really, yeah, really cool.
Well, on my new box, I'll be able to try all of these things out. You know, I'll put all the different distributions on it. So the next thing is to get to grips with VMware and or Xen or whatever, and get the sort of virtual machines on there. And
now,
that's my next project.
Are you planning on using installing VMware on a Linux host system or a Windows host system and running Linux underneath it?
I think this will be a pure Linux, so it'll be on. I think Fedora will be the core system, and then I'll be putting all the other ones on top as test systems, I think. But it's not. I haven't 100% decided yet. I'm open to suggestions.
I mean, I ran at work before I installed Ubuntu. I ran Arch Linux in a VMware session under Windows, and it was pretty good. I mean, VMware works great. I have not yet tried VirtualBox, which is the big thing now, because they just recently released a open... Was it a GPL version? Pat, do you remember? Link? Alan? Anybody?
We're all dead.
Yeah. VirtualBox just opened up their source and released that, and supposedly that's the big thing right now. That and
Fedora 7 is coming with it built in, isn't it? I think.
I think so. So that looks to be pretty hot.
Yeah, I don't really want to put Linux on top of Windows. Well, for a couple of reasons. One, I don't really want Windows on there in the first place. But the other thing is because it will be the development system will be using, you know, interfacing with the video cards and doing, you know, quite a lot of low level hardware stuff. I don't really want to have this sort of base development system going through another OS on the way to the hardware, really. So the core system will just be Fedora, and I can just thrash that. And then I can test particular things on other distributions and so forth, I think. But again, it's one of these things where it should be quite a good system. It's got quite a lot of memory on it, so I can actually choose various different things. And so now I have to decide, whereas my current box is so slow and underpowered that I have limited choice about what I can do on it.
Now, did you say you're building the system or you're getting a laptop or both?
This is a desktop system that I've ordered. In fact, I've got a laptop. Well, I've got a couple of laptops actually, but I've got a laptop with Ubuntu on it and a Windows laptop. But this is going to be a new development machine.
Because it's important to get a new machine every couple of months. You know that, right?
This will be the first one. Well, this will be the first developed machine I've probably had. Well, it may only be the second one in the lifetime of this project. So the other one's probably about 2 or 3 years old, but it's a shuttle. I went through a phase of having, liking the shuttle boxes, the X boxes, and they're called. They're basically the size of a large kind of shoe box. They're about 10.
A lot of people use them for MTV boxes.
Yeah,
the small form factor.
I had a couple of those. One went a bit wrong. The power button's gone a bit wonky, but they're actually quite noisy, and you can't get too much in there. So once you've got a couple of video cards in there, they are pretty congested and you can't get much in the way of disks in there. So the one I've got at the moment is pretty much, it's not much good as a development box, so I need to try different things out and get into it and out of it, because it's pretty inaccessible where everything's jammed in so tight.
Yeah, I just picked up a new Asus Mini ATX motherboard for a MET TV box that I'm putting together. It's going to be high definition.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it's a pretty nice motherboard. It has everything on there. Even has an NVIDIA card. It's got a 6150 on there, so it's pretty beefy.
Right.
It's got for an AMD dual-core chipset. And those CPUs have come down quite a bit in the last few months.
Yeah. You can actually get a ZoneMinder plugin for Myth TV now. Someone did one a couple of months ago, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I've never used Myth TV, so I'm not quite sure what it does. But I think the idea is that you... Well, I don't know what the idea is, actually, but I guess it's that you can watch your cameras on Myth TV, from its control panel or whatever you use.
Yeah, Myth TV is like a home theater system,
yeah.
Video, audio,
yeah.
A bunch of other things.
Right, okay, well, I need to look into that. I've just bought a big NAS to put a load of stuff on it, and so I'm thinking, what can I do with it? Because it supports all these different sort of video and audio streaming and plug them. Play and device discovery things. I'll have to have a look into that. Just another thing to go on the list.
Well, make sure you contact the Lug Radio Live people to do a presentation.
I do. I will. I've got that on paper in front of me. Well, I'll contact them. I'm not sure I'll suggest that I do a presentation, but we'll discuss it.
Just tell them that we sent you.
Right. Okay. Well, that's going to be good, is it? Is there a community of sort of radio people that keep in touch with each other?
Yeah, we try. We do our best to keep the lines of communication open and talk every once in a while.
Yeah, I mean, they're great guys. They are. We do communicate with them, and and the other Linux shows out there. Try and keep those avenues open. It's important, support one another.
Yeah. Well, you certainly don't get this sort of thing on sort of regular radio, but not over here anyway.
No, that's all about competition, and we're all about they want to attract listeners, and we try and push them away.
Well, I'm sure I've helped you in that regard.
We'll get a lot of hate, but no, we don't get hate. I honestly, yeah, you phenomenal guest. I mean, your project is outstanding, and I'm sure it's going to generate a heck of a lot of interest.
Yeah, well, you do have to be a bit careful sometimes in what you say, there are various little religious wars that you can stir up sometimes by staying slightly onto the wrong side of a particular argument.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
I probably get all the Emacs people writing in because I use Vi all the time.
You'll get the email that... Well, I was going to try ZoneMinder until you said you develop it all in Vi, so...
Yeah. Tool of the gods.
When you elect to choose a proper developmental environment, operating system, like Emacs, then we will talk.
No, I did try Emacs once, and I couldn't figure out how to exit from it, so I thought, oh, that's no good.
Yeah.
So now it's on to itself.
I think it's all it's all ingrained in my genes now. I'm, it's all VI and single windows and flat terminals only. So I think unless I have some sort of revelation, I think I'm probably stuck now.
Well, you could always just go back to front page. That makes a good editor.
Yeah.
Or Word.
Well.
Microsoft Word does a good job of editing.
Now you're scaring me. So.
Notepad.
Notepad. WordPad, baby. If the file's a little too large, you got to go to WordPad.
WordPad, yes.
Yeah. Well, Notepad just streams, although it doesn't do line endings, because it just runs them all on to the end, so you can't use Notepad.
Yeah, you got to be careful of those Windows. What do they call it? The DOS? Line breaks as opposed to Unix. Is that it? The DOS?
Oh, yeah, the character turn line feeds.
Oh, yes.
Microsoft ASCII is not real ASCII. Oh, I hate that.
No, I do have quite a lot of problems on some of my sites where people put in characters from their sort of Windows keyboard, and they do look okay when they're printed on the in a browser, when they show up in a browser, but when they try to edit them in something, and you'll find there's sort of two or three characters wide, and you're in by and trying to position your cursor and it's jumping around all over the place because it can't figure out what the characters are, and then you have to change the character set of the machine you're working on. It's frustrating.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? So when we're getting close to the end of the show here, I see. We got like 10 minutes.
So guys, here, Google's getting sued by Viacom for $1 billion for copyright infringement.
I'm interested to see how that plays out.
Yeah. Well, to me it sounds like they're just trying to, apart from make a few quid, they're trying to scare the content off YouTube, aren't they? Presumably because they're going to do something similar with them, because they get so much free publicity out of it. I can't imagine they don't want the publicity out of the clips, but I presume they just want to put them on something else that they control. That's my slightly cynical angle.
A lot of people have complained about YouTube playing copyrighted material. And, for instance, a few weeks back, we interviewed JTS Moore, the guy who did Revolution OS, and he was complaining that, there's clips of his movie that are up there without permission. And he sent cease and desist orders to Google to take it down, and they pretty much ignore him.
Yeah. Well, I think the BBC had a problem with them a while ago. And in the end, they said, well, actually, we're getting a lot of free publicity out of it. As long as it's just clips, and bits, excerpts from shows and stuff, and it's not the whole show, then they don't have a problem with it. And they just said, as long as it's not big shows, you're giving us free publicity.
Is the BBC still going ahead with using their own proprietary video format? They were talking about that like a couple of months ago, weren't they?
At the moment it's mostly real media, I think, is what they've used. They have been Windows Media and Real Media. And I think they may be going to their own, in which case I think it would be relatively open. They are quite good with open access to things. But they have made a few funny, strange decisions about formats and so forth. And they have a slightly unusual relationship with people in this country, because certain things they can offer to people outside of the country but not inside the country, because they have a charter. They're not a corporation. They have a charter, so they have to provide public certain things to the public in this country, and certain services, and there are things they can offer here they can't offer elsewhere, and things they can offer elsewhere that they can't offer here, and it is a little bit complicated to follow sometimes. I think their sort of heart's in the right place, but every now and again they do kind of make it a little bit more difficult than perhaps they should.
One day it'll all be free. Whether they like it or not, yeah. Right? No.
Well, it is free here, as long as you pay your license fee.
Well, there you go. Move to the UK.
Well, still, it's not cheap, but you get no commercial side.
What do you think of the American version of The Office?
I saw a couple of episodes of it. I thought it was okay, actually, as long as you didn't look at it as if it was an American version of The Office, as long as you looked at it as if it was something different. But the original, I thought, was a masterpiece, really. That was really good. And then there's quite a few American shows that are pretty good as well. But I think doing sort of, not spin-offs, but, doing a localized version of things doesn't always work. I'm not sure The Office worked. It was okay, but it didn't match up to the original, I don't think.
Yeah, I never watched the original Office. I'm talking here. Hold on. The wife's chiming in. I didn't get to that point yet. Anyway, I started with the United States version of The Office, and then we picked up the first season of The British Office, and I got to say, that's a damn good show.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Ricky Gervais, he's very good. He is very funny. And, I mean, a lot of his characters are very similar, but he has a sort of deadpan delivery, and, yeah, he is extremely popular. I tried to get tickets to go and see him because he was coming to Bristol, and there was no chance. They just went just like that. So I'll see him. I'll see him next time around.
Rumor has it that there's going to be a... I don't know. There's going to be a U.S. version of the IT Crowd, or is the IT Crowd coming to the United States?
I don't know. I can't say I've ever heard of it.
Did you ever watch the IT Crowd?
No, what is it?
I don't know what it is either. I don't know. Is it on?
It's a sitcom, and basically it's like an IT department in this small company. And it's basically this woman gets put in charge of the group. And she knows absolutely nothing about technology. She's, you know, got to basically deal with these two geeks working for her.
Yeah. No, I can't say I've ever watched. I don't watch a lot of TV, actually. I just say, I watch a bit of sport. I do watch quite a bit of NFL, actually. I'm a big Patriots fan, so I watch that from your side of the pond. But generally speaking, I don't get a lot of time to watch other TV. Most of it's not very good, anyway.
Well, that's because you're too busy working on ZoneMinder.
Well, I know, yeah. Well, at half time, you know, it's working on work as well, but...
Well, there you go.
Yeah. But, you know, it is... I've got a sort of DVR type thing, so if there's anything important, I tend to record it, and then a month later it gets erased anyway, and before I catch up to watch it, but at least I think I've made an effort.
Now, is that DVR, is that something provided by your cable company, or...?
Yeah, by the satellite. It's a satellite...
Oh.
Yeah, they don't. You can get them in the shops, but this is it's called a Sky Plus from Sky, and actually it's very good. It's very well featured. Yeah, you can't get anything off it. You can't stream off it like you can with a TiVo or anything like that onto disc or anything. But for what it is, it's actually pretty good, and it gives you for free. So.
Oh, wow. It's about close-up time, isn't it? Pat?
Yeah, we're going to wrap things up.
What time is it? Oh, why did I leave BinRev? That's my clock. Oh, it's... Whoa, we got to turn off BinRev in just a minute. Do we have any last words you'd like to say, Phil, before we...
Well, only that, like I said before, thanks for giving me the opportunity to come on. It's actually been very good fun actually talking to everybody and chatting about the other stuff as well as ZoneMinder. And if anyone wants to try it, come along, download it from the site, participate in the forum if you've got a problem. And there's a lot of people there, and a lot of people say it's actually quite a friendly place. So I'm sure you'll find someone to give you help if you get stuck. So give it a try, and I hope you find it useful.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for coming on. You've been a wonderful guest and hanging out with us. It's been great, and we appreciate your work on ZoneMinder and offering that to the community.
Well, thank you.
Pat, do you have anything you want to add, or any link, or Alan?
I'm good.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
Some interesting stuff. I'm looking forward to trying it out.
Well, good luck with that, and you know, I hope it's useful to you as well. It is quite addictive once you get started on it.
And that's over there on ZoneMinder.com.
Yeah,
them on the .com,
yeah.
Definitely. Any Frapper Map shout-outs there, Pat?
Actually, we have a few. There's a whole bunch of new ones. Give me a sec to load it up. We got Dead Identity coming on next week. Kino 1.0 came out, which is... Apparently, it's going to be the last version.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, so... We'll talk to him about that and get all the juicy details.
And cry.
All the new things he's added into the final version of Kino. All right, so let's see. We got for Frapper, we have... Oh, Captain Obvious, 999. Our friend from the forums.
It was about damn time.
He finally got himself on the Frapper map. And then we've got Jameson from Kenosha, Wisconsin. We've got Digican from Baltimore, Maryland. Chris from Louisville, Texas. And that's it for Frapper.
What's that? We don't have the total anymore, do we?
No, they got rid of that. They made it absolutely unusable. So,
bastards.
Yeah, it is what it is.
So now we can pretend we have more than Linux Reality.
Yeah. Hey, everybody loves chess, man. Chess is very popular.
That is true. That is true. Anybody else have anything before we close up? Silence.
I'm good here.
Silence means consent. All right. Thank you, I guess, everybody, for listening. We do have a closing song tonight. I just pulled something off of, where did I pull it off of? PodSafe Audio. It's a blues song by Midlife Crisis called Space Gun. Never heard it, but I'm interested to hear it. Caught my eye. It's a rather lengthy song, so enjoy, and we'll catch you all next week. And thanks a lot, Phil, and you have a good one.
Yeah, thank you.
Good day, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up. It's over.